So for our latest movie review, we are reviewing a horror classic.
Phantasm.
Yes.
Yeah.
The low-budget cult classic that started a franchise.
I saw the trailer for this when it came out. I must have been about 9. It scared the shit out of me. That trailer bothered me. There was something kind of subversive about this movie. And I remember some of the kids I went to school with saw it, and they'd come back and reported to me what the movie was about. And it always had this dark mystique, because I never really saw it. And they weren't playing it on HBO later when cable started.
Yeah.
It was almost kind of like, in your mind or my mind, HBO wasn't allowed to have Phantasm. That's how I kind of saw it. But really, seeing it now, and I got the Blu-ray edition. The Blu-ray edition's fantastic. I recommend
it. Yeah, they totally remastered it.
It looks really good for what it was. But seeing it now, I realized, well, it wasn't on HBO because it was basically kind of like a homemade, low-budget, disposable.
It was very low-budget, yeah.
Very low-budget. The movie was a low budget, but it was effective.
Yeah.
All right. It was fun to watch. And you know what? Unique.
Yeah.
Really wasn't ripping off anything else that I could tell in terms of, you know, like weird stuff like orange blood and killer Jawas and, you know, a round ball with a bunch of spikes on it that would bore into your head and shoot blood out of the back. You know, like it's like a human juicer. It was pretty cool, you know. And
human smoothie.
The movie was trying to create its own mythos, its own lore, and its own world. And I liked that. And I could tell that this was made by people that cared. They loved the tale.
Yeah.
That they were telling you.
Well, I should say, I mean, my experience with the Phantasm series, I actually saw Phantasm 2 first.
Okay.
I saw it in the theater. That came out in 1988. And I had heard about Phantasm. I knew who the tall man was and stuff like that. And I really, really liked the second one. So then I went back and rented the first one. Now, I ended up liking the second one better just because it's more accomplished. And I hadn't seen the first one in a long time until you got the Blu-ray and we watched it.
I'd heard of tall man. I didn't realize that this is where that came from.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a tall man.
Yeah.
I'd seen that guy, you know, over the years here and there. I'd never seen this movie. I'd seen maybe little snippets of it. But having seen it now, I'm glad I watched it. And because some of the little snippets I remembered.
Yeah.
Like the other, going into the other dimension at the end. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. That's where that came from, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I think the coolest thing about this movie, and, you know, if you don't know, obviously this is a classic, but if you don't know, the movie came out in 1979, written, directed, edited, photographed, pretty much everything by Don Coscarelli.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very amateurish effort, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically him and all his friends. They filmed it over the course of a year, just whenever they could get people to be free.
Yeah.
They pretty much did all the shit themselves. I think Don Coscarelli's mom did like some of the special effects and makeup and
you
stuff.
You can tell that mausoleum was a cheap set with a bunch of wallpaper on it.
Right.
But I appreciated the effort.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of the charm of the movie, I guess.
The coolest thing about the first Phantasm is the concept behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the weirdest premises of any of the movies from the period.
It's very original. I liked it. It was very original.
Now, it should be noted, and the Wikipedia page goes a little bit into this, Don Coscarelli, I don't think he had made a horror movie prior to this, but he was very into horror from childhood. And so he thought, well, I'm going to make a horror movie because his movies before that hadn't really done very well. And horror movies were actually doing pretty good. Halloween had come out the previous year and stuff. So he decided he was going to try his hand at doing one. Now, originally, what he wanted to do was he wanted to make an adaptation of Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury. Now, obviously, that the rights to that had been sold to someone else because it was made into a movie by someone else. So he decided to write his own original story. Now, he liked the idea of Suspiria, where it was kind of like nightmarish and all this weird shit happened and they didn't really explain anything. He liked that. He also liked the soundtrack of Suspiria. So the soundtrack of the first Phantasm is very goblin-esque, or, you know, very prog rock kind of sounding.
Yeah.
Like I said, the coolest thing about this movie is that, and I think you said this last night, you said the movie really punches above its weight.
Yeah.
It has this really rich mythos. But in the first movie, they really didn't, they couldn't explore it to a huge extent because they didn't have the budget. But the ideas behind it were so intriguing.
Yeah, you wanted to know more.
That you wanted to know more about it. So this is almost something that needed sequels because it needed to expand its universe when he had more money to kind of
flesh that out. After you get done seeing it, you're like, wait a minute, hold on. Was that another dimension or was it hell? You know,
yeah, was it another planet? Yeah, what was going on?
Yeah, you know, were they really shrinking them down because of the gravity?
Yeah.
You know, just ridiculous shit. But I liked it, you know. I can understand it. It's kind of like in the way that Evil Dead needed sequels.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, because they didn't have the money to expand upon this original idea they had.
Right.
So you know, once you get more money, you can kind of open that up a little bit and explain it a little bit more. Although in a way, it was kind of cooler that it wasn't explained. It was just like, here's this mortuary.
Yeah, you're intrigued. You're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, here's this mortuary in this town, and there's a mortician in there, the tall man.
Yeah.
That's all he's ever called. And he's super creepy. He has yellow alien blood.
Super strong.
He's super strong. He has all these little bitty, like, dwarves with little Jawa hoods on.
He can make you hallucinate, I guess. Or he's calling the dead out of the ground. You don't know.
Yeah.
Hands come up and grab you out of the ground.
Yeah, there's a sphere with spikes in it that
he's
comes
going
out.
Into your dreams.
And he can go into your dreams and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then there's in the mortuary, there's all these little barrels with little shrunken bodies in it.
Yeah.
And there's like a portal to another dimension. And each of these things is just kind of like introduced.
Yeah, and it's very unique. You know, it's not a zombie movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not vampires. You know, it's not werewolves. It's not aliens. You know, it's just its own thing, you know, which they're kind of creating their own genre and their own mythos.
And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so.
It was kind of Lovecraftian in a way.
In a way, it was,
kind of like something Lovecraft maybe would have dreamt up. I did notice that in one scene, the kid goes to a psychic and he has to put his hand in a pain box for the witch and the witch's daughter. I'm going, boy, he's ripping off Dune.
Yeah.
Because that's the same thing Paul Atreides had to do, you know, and he took his hand out and there was nothing wrong with it. That's in this movie. And then it cuts to a bar scene and the name of the bar is what? Dune's Canteen or Dune's Bar.
Yeah, or whatever it's called.
And I go, this dude likes Frank Herbert.
Yeah, because that scene was very similar to that.
It was before the Dune movie.
Yeah.
So he could have only read the book.
Yeah. So he must have liked that idea.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean,
and that was like, that's what gave him his street cred to go up against Tall Man, that he had passed that test. That was the.
Yeah, because that was the whole, I mean, the point of that scene.
He was basically saying fear is the mind killer.
Right.
And that's how he's getting through it.
Yeah, that was pretty much what the point of that scene was.
Straight out of Dune.
And that's why later on, you know, he kind of flashed back to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, one of the coolest things about this movie, and I'm sure I've mentioned this on some other reviews, particularly probably my one on Suspiria. I really like surrealism in horror when it's done right. I mean, you can do it and it's just stupid and pretentious or whatever, but surrealism in horror, to me, if it's done correctly, makes the movie creepier because you can't get a handle on it. It's like a nightmare. Like, this is why, and this might seem contradictory, but I'm never scared by horror movies that have a premise that could really happen, like a serial killer movie, for example. I like them, but I don't find them scary, even though a serial killer is a real thing.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be scared by a movie, it's always going to be something weird or unexplained, because a serial killer is scary, but you know what that is. It's a psycho. It's a crazy person.
Right.
And it would behave like a crazy person behaves. He can't do supernatural shit. He can't turn up in your fucking nightmares.
Yeah.
He can't do anything like that. When you do surrealism in a horror movie, you don't know what to expect, really.
I wonder if this tall man character inspired Freddy Krueger.
It could be.
Because he was going into that boy's dreams.
Yeah, true. That's,
I wonder if that was inspiration for that.
It might have been.
There was a lot of cool shit in this movie.
Yeah.
Another thing that, even though it's a cheap, low-budget flick, it's just kind of done well by guys that cared about it. And it's got one of the baddest-ass hot rods I've ever seen on there. It's got a 71 or 72 Plymouth Barracuda.
Yeah.
Dressed up to be like a Hemi Cuda.
Yeah.
And in the soundtrack, when this car goes by, man, you hear those high compression pistons. You know? Yeah.
I can't tell you how excited Tom was about that car.
That was
this movie.
A badass car.
He had to stop the movie and look up and look it up online what car that was.
Well, from the back end, I'm going, is that a Nova with a body kit on it? What is that thing? You know? And I went, oh, it's a Barracuda dressed up like a Hemi Cuda.
Well, the whole reason
that's a fake Hemi Cuda, but it looked cool.
The whole reason that that's in the movie is because Don Coscarelli evidently had gone to a high school with a guy that had a car like that, and that's he really liked it. So he's like, I'm going to put that shit in my movie. Yeah.
It's got the big fat tires in the back.
Which
and it's jacked up. It's like the ultimate 70s car. That's the car that you drive around town looking like Han Solo.
Yeah.
Grabbing titty with it. That's what you do. Pointed 70s titty. That car was fucking badass. Yeah. That car was badass. It made you want to drink. It did, man. I'm looking at that and I'm going, I could go for some wild turkey right about now. And a vest. Feathered hair and a vest with some wild turkey.
Yeah, the main guy that's in this that plays the older
some
brother
chick
Jody.
With bell bottoms.
Yeah. He looks like if Han Solo. Now, what did I say? If Han Solo and who was the other guy?
The Hoff.
And David Hasselhoff had a baby. If that was possible somehow.
That's what he looks
then
like.
Then that's what he would look like.
Yeah. And actually, I was saying that. And that tall man, to me, he kind of looked a little bit like Marlon Brando, like a tall Marlon Brando. There's something about his face.
Yeah.
You said he looked like somebody else.
I know, and now I can't remember who it was.
I said, well, if that dude and Marlon Brando had a baby, then it would be him.
Yeah, now I can't remember who it was. Well, it's funny because I hadn't seen the first Phantasm in so long, and I had forgotten how much younger Angus Scrimm was in this movie. Because the second one didn't come out for like another 9 years, and he looked considerably older. Although Angus Scrimm did not die until 2016.
I tell you what, he was a scary looking dude. And you know, they did something in this cheap, low-budget flick that impressed me. That kid looked at an old black-and-white photo of the house, and in it is a dude driving a horse and buggy. It's actually like an old horse-drawn hearse.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
And it was live motion.
Yeah, like the picture
action.
Started to move.
Yeah, he turned.
That was a cool ass scene.
Yeah, I was like, damn, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best effects in the movie, I thought. And it was like super creepy. That stuff like that creeps me out. Yeah,
that and that flying ball. That little flying metal ball, they never explained it. And that's one of the strengths of this movie. Like, fuck you. I was gonna.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a sphere and it flies through the air and then blades come out of it.
We're going to show you this shit and we're not even going to explain it.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Well, like I said, he did that on purpose because he really liked movies where they're just like, here's a weird thing.
There's a mausoleum.
Deal with it.
There's a mausoleum with this steel ball flying around in it, and any moment it can just come and kill you. Kind of like that little smiley face, that angry face from that video game Berserk. Remember that?
Yeah.
It started bouncing. Like, oh shit, because you can't kill it. Gotta leave. It's like that. They had one of those in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and I should note too, and I don't want to forget to mention this, and I think I mentioned this in our Burnt Offerings review.
Yeah.
The house that's the Morningside Mortuary in Phantasm is the same house that was in Burnt Offerings.
That's right.
And it was the same. It's in California somewhere.
Karen Black running around.
That's right.
Sexy cross ass.
Yeah.
cross ass. Karen Black.
Now on,
I like Karen Black.
Everybody loves Karen Black.
There's
how can you
about,
not love Karen Black?
Something magnetic about Karen Black.
She is so awesome.
Yeah,
and she's been in so many cool like horror movies.
Yeah.
I love her so much.
Yeah, and she always kind of struck me as being slightly cross-eyed.
She is a little bit. Cross-eyed.
Is she a little bit cross-eyed?
She is a little bit cross-eyed.
I didn't know if it was me my imagination.
No.
Okay. All
right. She's a little bit cross-eyed
because I could never really catch it.
Yeah.
She
has stealth cross-eyed.
It was sexy though.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. There is something like really sexy about her.
Yeah. I don't know what it was.
It was that same kind of thing with, you know, like we were talking about Adrian Barbeau on the Fog and stuff like that. There was just some kind of, you know.
It's hard to tell. It's
yeah.
The 70s thing for some reason. There was something about those people back then. I don't know what it was.
Speaking of the 70s, we were kind of making a lot of jokes about this when we were watching Phantasm last night.
Yeah.
So the main kid that's in it.
Oh, yeah. This shit's awesome.
Now, the kid. Now, I should be said, and I mean this in the most affectionate possible way. Yeah. The acting in this, not great.
No.
I mean, these are obviously.
Didn't have to be great, though.
Yeah. These are obviously amateur actors. These were Don Coscarelli's friends. But the kid that was in it, you know, not a fantastic actor, but I love the kid in this. He's supposed to be 13, right?
Yeah.
He looks slightly older, but not much.
He's more like 17.
Yeah. 67. But he's supposed to be 13. And I kind of love, because this was made in 1979, no one bats an eye about the kid, one, running around by himself.
Yeah.
Two, drinking a whole six pack. Three, driving a car.
Watching his brother knocking down girls out in the cemetery. You know, it's just the way it was back then. You know, I've mentioned it on other shows.
I remember.
Back in the 70s, you could just throw 13-year-old the keys, go down there and get some beer, kid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's kind of why we laughed, because
right. The
older brother, he's like busy humping this woman in the cemetery, and the brother's been following him around. Yeah. So he kind of just gave him the keys to his barracuda, and he's like, hey, go home. And they were like, yeah, go get me some beer and some smoke.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, go pick us up some poon on the way back. That's the way they were back then.
Go get some hookers.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, it's funny because, and then later on, there's a scene where Jody, the brother, is sitting on the porch with the 13-year-old kid, and he's like laughing because he's like, hey, five down, one to go with the beers.
I thought that might have been I think that was a deleted scene, though.
I don't know. I think that was it.
Was it still left in there? We watched all the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray, which they're worth watching. And in the deleted scenes, there's a bunch of shit that kid was doing that they had to cut out.
You know,
downing lots of alcohol. They were getting drunk. I don't think they were smoking weed, but...
No, I don't remember any weed smoking.
Yeah.
But the thing... Well, the funniest thing about it, and you can kind of tell this because, like I said, this movie was filmed like on weekends, like over a year. It only cost about $300,000 to make, roughly. Don Coscarelli said, I don't really know because we made it over a long period of time. Mm. Ended up making almost $12 million. So that's a pretty good, pretty successful run. Basically, he's like, well, I had to edit out a lot of... Because a lot of the stuff was improvised, which... Yeah. You will see if you watch the movie. I mean, some of it does look improvised.
You know what, though? I think that gives it a better feel, though.
Yeah. It seems like a home movie, kind of.
It seems very organic.
Yeah.
And even though you definitely tell that the acting's not that good and some of the sets are fake, there's an amount of honesty in this movie.
Well, and there's like, it's kind of like a lot of movies from that period, even if they were cheaply made.
You still liked it.
Yeah. Well, there's some kind of like atmosphere, some kind of vibe about them that's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And this has that too. It's funny because Don Coscarelli was like, okay, well, I made the movie with all the scenes still in it, and he showed it. He paid some people to come and watch it, like before he released it, and he called that screening a disaster.
Yeah.
And he said that people responded well to like the nightmarish surrealism parts, but he's like, there was too much quote unquote character development, which I guess was all those scenes like where Reggie and Jody are sitting on the porch playing guitar.
Right.
There was one scene that was actually cut out that was like a big, essentially a food fight in Reggie's ice cream parlor where like the kid like passed out drunk and they all piled ice cream on him, and then they were like eating it off him.
They put a banana between his legs and two cookies by him.
Yeah, so it was like a dick and balls. I was like, okay, that's a little strange.
They got buried under ice cream.
This supposedly 13-year-old kid.
It's a hilarious movie in a certain way. I mean, it is what it is, but I do recommend the Blu-ray. The restoration's really good. The soundtrack's good. The music's good for what it is.
Yeah.
It's that type of fucking movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the movies of the era.
Yeah.
But I think punching above its weight, it's doing a lot with a very little.
And like I said, the best thing about this is the concept, the mythos that it introduces, which kind of got explored a lot in the later
sequels. It reminds me in many ways of The Evil Dead, the very first one.
It is very much like, not as zany.
No, not as zany, and not quite as special effects intensive.
Right.
But it has that same kind of a vibe. I wouldn't surprise me if Evil Dead was slightly inspired by this movie in a certain way. But I think Evil Dead had a bigger budget.
Yeah, but probably not by much. But it definitely had the same, these are a group of friends who are really into horror. They had this crazy idea.
Right.
And we're just going to like film it over the course of a few weekends or something. And we're all going to just kind of hang out and do whatever we do.
I definitely want to see the other ones now.
Well, yeah, like definitely I said, and them. I'm going to say, now, I haven't seen Phantasm 2 in a while. Like I said, I saw it in the theater when it came out in 1988. And I probably saw it on cable again once more many years later. But I haven't seen it for many years. I remember liking the second one more than the first one.
Well, then I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I think it was a little more cohesive.
Yeah.
I don't remember it explaining that much more, but I think that was kind of a strength of it. Like I said, I kind of liked that they were just like, here's this mortuary with this guy in it, all this weird shit happens, and you just have to deal with it. They don't explain it or what happens or anything like that. We'll definitely have to do at least part two, because I remember liking that a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a fan now. Now I want to see the other ones.
Yeah. And there were, you know, obviously there was another one. Phantasm 3 was Lord of the Dead. That came out in 1994. I don't know if I saw that one or not. I might have.
I don't know if this restored version is on YouTube for rent. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Yeah. You guys are going to have to check for yourself. But the restored version, it looks really good.
Yeah.
And it didn't cost me much. I think I got it for about $9 delivered, $10 delivered, something.
Yeah,
like
and it looks great. I mean,
I got it proudly in my collection.
But yeah, and the funny thing too is that there was a Phantasm IV called Oblivion that came out in 1998.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this, but one came out in 2016. Phantasm Ravager.
We're going to watch him. I'm going to watch him one at a time.
And I was like, I don't even remember if was Angus Scrim even in that. I mean, he died that year, but I don't know if he would have been in it or not. Right. Because it's not really, it can't be Phantasm without Angus Scrim in it.
Yeah.
And well, he's been like in tons before, of other movies too, because he's so freaky looking.
Like I said before, I'm not too dependent on characters in the movies. Yeah. Like, you know, Halloween 3 doesn't have Michael Myers in it, but that's one of my favorite.
Although I don't even think that
I don't consider it to be a Halloween movie.
Yeah, I don't consider it part of that franchise because it's a totally crazy, on its own kind of movie.
It's a standalone.
Yeah.
It's crazy, good, low budget horror flick.
I was going to mention something about Angus Scrim, who played the tall man. They said in the first movie, he was actually wearing lifts in his shoes, so he would look taller.
Look taller.
And they also got him a suit. You need some. They also got him a suit that was too small.
So he looked bigger in a small suit.
No, well, he'd look thinner and taller. He'd look more scarecrow-like.
Yeah, he was weird looking.
He's a weird looking dude. And
I remembered him... I remember him from the trailer as a kid seeing him. I remember seeing that guy going, ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, Don Coscarelli, he had worked with Angus Scrim on another movie earlier, and he was so freaked out by that guy that that's why he wanted him to be the baddie in his movie, because he was so strange looking.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't really play any. I've seen him in other movies since then, but.
He's scarier than Lurch to me.
Yeah, he can't. Well, Lurch was kind of lovable.
Right.
I always had a crush on him.
Oh, when I was a kid.
The original Lurch, Ted Cassidy.
When I saw that as a kid, though, Lurch.
Yeah.
He looked scary until I knew the character.
Yeah.
When you first see him, you're like, ooh. You know?
He was such a nice man, though.
Yeah.
Ooh. He used to, do you know he's...
Mrs. Adams.
He's from, I think he's from Florida, actually.
Is he?
He might even be from Daytona Beach or from the area that I'm from.
Okay.
He used to be a lifeguard. Isn't that funny?
Huh.
You don't imagine Lurch being a lifeguard because he looks like a big Frankenstein's monster.
Well, they got him dressed up as that.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, so... Any horror fans, I'm sure you've probably seen the original Phantasm.
Yeah,
but if you haven't, you should definitely watch it. Like I said, it's very low budget, obviously.
Yeah.
It's kind of amateurish, but in a way that the first Evil Dead is amateurish. It has that same, but not as wacky.
If you like Evil Dead 1, you'll like this.
Yeah. And like I said, the concept behind it is just so cool. And if you really like surrealist horror like I do, then you really need to see it.
We're definitely going to hit you with Phantasm 2 because I'm going to order that. I want to see that one.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it in ages and I remember really liking it a lot.
Okay,
so that'll do it for our latest movie review. Remember, if you like our show, to like, share, subscribe on all your social media. And if you'd like to contribute to the show, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Or if you'd like to give a one-time donation through PayPal, you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account. Also, be sure to check out our regular episodes, which come out every Tuesday, and our movie reviews, which come out every Friday. And until next time, bye.